No One Tells You This. That's the title of a new memoir by writer Glynis MacNicol, who recounts what it was like to turn 40, be single, without children, and be happy. Although, by all accounts, a lot of people didn't believe her. Glynis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Talk to us about how you felt about you were approaching 40, and talk to us about your mindset at the time. How did you approach this, what's seen as a milestone for a lot of people? What was your feeling about entering your fourth decade?
I approached it with a significant amount of dread. I think I had it in my head that after 40, having not sort of acquired a partner, I didn't have children, that I was somehow sort of overnight going to turn into this, you know, shriveled, unattractive, no more possibilities, invisible person, and that, you know, it was sort of the end of the line, which it sounds ridiculous. And it, as I say it now, I'm 43, it sounds extreme, but I think a lot of women approach that age with that sense. And the reason for that is that there's very little cultural messaging around the idea that aging for women is an enjoyable experience or something to be celebrated. Of course, I woke up on my 40th birthday. It was almost immediate. It was rather an extreme turnabout. I woke up on my 40th birthday and I felt suddenly untethered from all of those expectations and that like internal clock I'd been on, and felt really wonderful. And then proceeded over the next year to become somewhat resentful that no one had prepared me for the fact it could be wonderful, just as no one had actually prepared me for the ways in which it would be difficult. I just think we have very narrow narratives around the experience of women. And I thought people had, not people, but that there's been a general sense that I should dread this. And I just thought, wow, we're doing everyone a disservice by not saying, actually, this can be really amazing and really difficult. So,
and
at the end of that year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to those around you and your peers who had turned 40 and were in a similar situation, did they say, yeah, I could have told you so?
You know, even beforehand, there were women saying, it gets better. It's wonderful. You're going to enjoy it. I think what I was missing, what I found very suffocating, is that there was no larger narrative of it. I remember feeling on my 40th birthday this real desire to like go to the movies and sort of see some version of my life reflected back at me, or read a novel. Mm-hmm. And that to me is really what was missing, that I could look to my left and to my right and see women living similar lives to me and enjoying them, but that there was no larger story that we could all relate to. And I found that difficult. And then I found it frustrating.
And for men, do they go through the same? Do they have the same fears and, you know, trepidation, etc., about turning this age and then wake up that morning and think, actually, it's okay?
Oh my God. Well, I have to be honest and say I'm less interested in the male experience right this second in the United States. But I think very basic. I've certainly, writing on this subject, I do hear from a fair share of men. I think, obviously, it goes without saying that men do not face the fertility question that women face. Yeah. And I think sometimes age is a shock to men because they haven't, women are literally on a clock from the time they hit puberty. You're very aware of your body's progression and what's happening. And I think for some men, it's like a little out of left field, like, oh my goodness, how did I get older? And then, you know, they react with shock. Whereas clearly women have a much different relationship to it. Mm-hmm. Also, there's plenty of examples of older men doing whatever they want, whenever they want it. I mean, how much coverage did George Clooney's wedding get, and how old is George Clooney? You know, and has babies and stuff. Like, yeah. It's not it's not like men face 40 as if it's a cliff and of no return.
So why don't we hear the stories? Why is society not celebrating those stories? And why are not more women like yourself and indeed generations before you, or at least one generation before you, coming out telling this tale?
I think there's probably a number of answers to that question. In the United States, this is one of my favorite anecdotes about this. It was not legal for women to get their own credit card until 1974. Huh. I don't know what the date for that is in Ireland, but obviously you just had an enormous referendum on another subject.
I think you can fairly guess. I mean, women in Ireland had to give up their jobs when they were getting married back in the 70s. So, you know,
you
can be fairly sure that we have some progress to make in certain areas as well.
Precisely. And I think, bigger picture, well, let's just focus on that for a second. So the financial independence of women is a brand new thing. I was born in 1974, and so I really do belong to this first generation of women who've been able to navigate their lives to their own liking within all of the, you know, usual caveats about that. But and I think the more... we're still figuring out a language around this experience, but the more women that experience it, like the more we talk about it, the more common it becomes. Mm-hmm. I also think who's holding the purse strings and the companies that tell the stories, it's almost never women. So the bigger picture, we're not seeing these narratives because it's hard to convince men that there's, you know, as my friend Cindy Gallup says, there's a lot of money to be made by taking women seriously. That is a lesson the world is learning at a very slow pace in nearly every industry.
Well, it's interesting. I saw a food store here recently, and they said they had introduced single, you know, meals for single people, which obviously, you know, food stores have been doing for some time, but often it would be mm-hmm. meals for two. And now they had started mm-hmm. introducing the single chicken breast or the single, you know, whatever it might be.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. But they noted that it had taken a long time to get to this. And when they looked at their mm-hmm. sales, they were really struck that the sales absolutely soared. And they realised the single market of people in whatever age they might be is a really increasing demographic. And supermarkets are starting to realise that they can capitalise on this now. So one imagines that, you know, restaurants will capitalise more on it, because how many women do we know who will say that they would never go out and eat dinner on their own?
So the interesting thing about that, and I'm very lucky that I live in New York City in that regard, eating in your own in New York is considered the most normal thing to do, man or woman. Yeah. I'm aware that that's not the case everywhere, because when I travel, I eat alone without thinking about it. And I've certainly had the experience of the wait staff hovering, waiting for my companion to show up who doesn't exist. I do think there is a shame attached to being a woman alone that we have all internalized to some degree. So it's almost as if you feel apologetic or that you have something to be ashamed about when you eat by yourself. I'm one of the really wonderful things after that turning 40 is that I write in the book about for a story. I went on a cruise through the south of France, and everyone on the cruise boat was over 60. And that the fact I was alone was making them uncomfortable. It no longer makes me uncomfortable, no matter where I am. I sort of am amused by other people's reactions. That certainly was not always the case. I have full sympathy for women who struggle with that, and very aware that culturally, New York can be somewhat different, very different in many ways than other places.
Yeah. Did you, and I, you know, I said at the start, you discovered turning 40, being single without children and happy, but you do recount the case of those who, you know, were quite convinced that you might be happy at that moment in time, but you would certainly not be happy when you came to your senses and realised you were still in your 40s and single and without whatever.
Right.
Do people still try and convince you that it'll be okay, Glynis, you will meet someone and you still have time because there's ways and means with science to have kids, so don't fret?
So I'll say I did write an article around this subject for the New York Times the past weekend, which I got so much feedback on. It was fascinating. I never hear that from people who know me. I think I do not have friends that second guess any of my choices. They know me very well and are supportive. I get that I definitely get that from people who don't know me well. And, you know, I was at a friend's wedding and someone said, oh, don't worry, there's still time for you. Or when I talk about not wanting kids or being okay without having kids, I often from women who are older than me who have children, I hear the, oh, you're going to change your mind. And I think behind all of this is a much larger topic and something we're all experiencing now with the Me Too movement, which is we don't believe women. It's not, you know, we don't live in a culture where we believe women know themselves. We're uncomfortable with that idea. And so it frustrates me, this idea that even though I've set up my life very well and I'm a responsible adult and I've had some success in my career, that there's this assumption that I don't know what I want or that women don't know what they want or that they shouldn't be.
Who says it to you? Do women say it to you or is it mainly men?
Honestly, men are not terribly, I find men actually are not overly interested in this. It's often women. It's often women older than me. Very rarely women my age or younger, but there's a generational divide I've found, and I'm painting it in broad strokes, where women who are 10 to 15 years older than me really struggle with my life choices. And I think, as with most cases of someone who doesn't know you having a problem with your life, their issues are probably with their own life, but it gets on mine.
they're projecting, I think, is what we can conclude.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Yes, they're projecting.
Do they see you? Have any of them seen you as selfish? Do they ever throw the, you're not having kids, so therefore you're a selfish individual? Do you ever have you had that sort of response?
Not to my face. I've certainly had recent mail, along those lines. I think one of the things I write about in the book, my mother was quite ill when I turned 40 and I was oftentimes a caretaker for her. And my sister was a single mother and had small children and I was a caretaker for her. And so I really tried to push back against, I think there are two ideas around single women. And one is that you're selfish and spoiled. I have been told more times than I can count that, oh, it's so lucky you can go to brunch. And the other one is you're an object of pity. And I think my experience was the reverse on both ends. And so I really tried in this book to talk about all the responsibilities that fall on you when you are the single person in people's lives, that I was the first or second emergency phone call for so many friends and family. And when those pile up all at once, it's incredibly overwhelming. And not having that recognized is hard. Mm-hmm. And so part of the book was me just trying to recognize the experiences of so many women I know who are caretakers, you know, and who are the people keeping things together for everyone else in their lives. Mm.
So the title of the book is No One Tells You This. And after the book came out, and indeed the article in the New York Times, have many people said to you, I could have told you this, or why didn't you tell me this earlier? Is there a feeling that there's a sisterhood out there who are all sharing in your experience?
Yes. After the Times article came out, I was getting an email probably an average of every 10 to 20 minutes, almost all from women, almost all positive, ages 20 through 70, married, not married, children, not children, saying thank you for, you know, recognizing my life to some extent. And when the book came out 2 days ago, I've had very full reading and book events since then. And I would say that the response aligns, which is, I'm glad to be seen. I think a lot of women struggle, not just single women, like generally a lot of women just in general, particularly women of a so-called certain age, struggle with invisibility. You know, culturally, we do not see women who are not, you know, young.
And I was going to say, and the other side of thing is, do you find institutions maybe value women when they have children? So that there's this sense that, you know, if you haven't had children and you're in your 40s, that you're somehow viewed as something less by
It's a very complicated conversation in the United States because of our healthcare system, which is not universal healthcare. I'm Canadian, so I understand, you know, what it is to have universal healthcare, and now I'm very aware of what it is to not have universal healthcare. There is a penalty for being pregnant and having babies in the workforce. The Times has written extensively about it in the United States, and the you'll hear a lot of women who don't have children talk about how a lot of the responsibility during other people's maternity leave is sort of heavy-handed on them. So the United States in that regard is specific and unusual, unfortunately, because our healthcare system is a real awful disaster. And too complicated to explain. But it's, I think in that conversation, as with so much here, the healthcare affects all of this in ways that are very puzzling to people outside of this country. Like, add it to the list right now. But, you know, it's people with babies get punished just as much as people without, unfortunately.
That's another book, and it's another conversation.
Oh, my goodness.
And you've sent your president across the Atlantic to us as well. So
have fun, everyone.
we'll be happy to send him back once he's played his few rounds of golf.
I am very sure. Listen, we had him in New York for a long time before the rest of the world had to deal with him. It is a very strange moment in America to be releasing this book. I feel very grateful, but it is very intense summer at the moment.
I can only imagine. Exactly. Well, it's entitled No One Tells You This. She's telling you now. It's by Glynis MacNicol. Glynis, lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Cheers. Cheers. That's Glynis MacNicol joining us there from New York. And we leave you tonight with Clementine and Pink Martini. Good night.
There's a place. There's a packing up of summer clothes in the lazy days of my mind. You've always been my Clementine.